end once again here in this hour as our guests, Philip Graham. He's a writer and teaches writing at University of Illinois, and Tonya Liatsakos from Pages for All Ages Bookstore. They brought some books in to recommend, and we'll do that. But again, if you want to call in, tell us about something that you've read that you think is good, you do that. Well, who wants to start off this hour?
I will start.
Okay.
I'm very excited about this book. It's my prediction for the next Newbery Award winner. It's by Jerry Spinelli, who's won it before for Maniac McGee. He's written a number of other very good children's books. I don't know if you want to call them children's books. These really aren't just books for kids. They're really, really books for everyone, I think. This one is called Star Girl. If you look for it in your bookstore, you might have a hard time finding it because it doesn't say Star Girl.
It is a picture of a
There's a
star
picture of a star and then like a stick figure girl. And it's about a group of boys, and they're in high school. I think they're about sophomores in high school. And they live in Arizona in the desert. And one year, a new kid comes to their school, and she's unlike anything they've ever seen or anyone they've ever met before. And her name is Star Girl, and she doesn't dress like them. She doesn't behave like them. She wears these big flowing pioneer skirts and no makeup, which apparently in their school is very unusual. And they all just think she's the strangest thing. She carries a ukulele on her back. She sings happy birthday to somehow she knows everyone's birthday.
Yeah.
I mean, she just came to the school. She knows everyone's birthday, and she sings happy birthday to them in the lunchroom. She brings people presents, pumpkins on Halloween. They all just think she's insane, you know. And they don't like her very much at first because they don't like people different from them, but they begin to really love her. I'm going to read the back real quick, and then I'll read a passage. She was elusive. She was today. She was tomorrow. She was the faintest scent of a cactus flower, the flitting shadow of an elf owl. We did not know what to make of her. In our minds, we tried to pin her to a corkboard like a butterfly, but the pin merely went through, and away she flew. And, yeah,
nice.
Isn't that pretty?
Mm.
She is just something else, and she just doesn't seem to care what anyone thinks of her. And Leo, who's the main boy in the story, has really sort of fallen in love with her, and his friends think she's crazy. Think he's crazy. And she takes him to a place where she doesn't even talk like anybody else. She takes him, she says, she's going to take him to an enchanted place because they exist, you know. And so here they are in the desert. And she says, "We're here." I look around. The place couldn't have been more ordinary. The only notable presence was a tall, dilapidated saguaro, a bundle of sticks, in worse shape than Archie's Senor. Senor Saguaro is a cactus in their friend Archie's backyard. The rest was gray scrub and tumbleweed and a few prickly pears. "I thought it might look different," I said. "Special? Scenic?" "Yeah, I guess." "It's a different kind of scenery," she said. "Shoes off." We pulled off our shoes. "Sit." We sat, legs crossed. Cinnamon scampered down my arm and onto the ground. That's right, she's got a pet rat, Cinnamon. She carries him with her everywhere. Stargirl shrieked. "Stop!" She scooped up the rat and put him in her bag. "Owls, hawks, snakes, he'd be a tasty meal." "So," I said, "when does the enchantment start?" We were sitting side by side, facing the mountains. "It started when the earth was born." Her eyes were closed. Her face was golden in the setting sun. "It never stops. It is always. It's just here." "So what do we do?" She smiled. "That's the secret." Her cupped hands rested in her lap. "We do nothing, or as close to nothing as we can." Her face turned slowly to me, though her eyes remained closed. "Have you ever done nothing?" I laughed. "My mother thinks I do it all the time." "Don't tell her I said so, but your mother is wrong." She turned back to the sun. "It's really hard to do nothing totally. Even just sitting here, like this, our bodies are churning, our minds are chattering. There's a whole commotion going on inside us." "That's bad," I said. "It's bad if we want to know what's going on outside ourselves. Don't we have eyes and ears for that?" She nodded. "They're okay most of the time, but sometimes they just get in the way. The earth is speaking to us, but we can't hear because of all the racket our senses are making. Sometimes we need to erase them, erase our senses. Then, maybe, the earth will touch us. The universe will speak. The stars will whisper." The sun was glowing orange now, clipping the mountain's purple crests. "So how do I become this nothing?" I'm not sure, she said. There's no one answer to that. You have to find your own way. Sometimes I try to erase myself. I imagine a big pink soft soap eraser, and it's going back and forth, and it starts down at my toes, back and forth, and there they go, poof, my toes are gone. And then my feet, and then my ankles. But that's the easy part. The hard part is erasing my senses, my eyes, my ears, my nose, my tongue. And last to go is my brain, my thoughts, memories, all the voices inside my head. That's the hardest, erasing my thoughts. She chuckled faintly. My pumpkin. And then, if I've done a good job, I'm erased. I'm gone. I'm nothing. And then the world is free to flow into me like water into an empty bowl. And, I said, and I see. I hear, but not with eyes and ears. I'm not outside my world anymore, and I'm not really inside it either. The thing is, there's no difference anymore between me and the universe. The boundary is gone. I am it, and it is me. I am a stone, a cactus thorn. I am rain. She smiled dreamily. I like that most of all, being rain.
Mm, that's very nice.
Yes.
Talk about your dangerous ideas. I don't know
exactly.
If we want to introduce children to concepts like that.
Newbery, I promise you, Newbery
right.
Award.
All right.
All right.
I have a book. I'm going to recommend, I've never done this before, I don't think, is to recommend a book I haven't finished reading yet. In fact, I'm only on page 41, and it's a 700-page book. It's actually 600 pages. It's a 100-page index for this novel. Odd. In fact, there are lots of strange things about this book, typographically, very, very strange, and prose is all sorts of different places. There's a little triangle of sideways prose in one of the corners of the book and so forth and upside down. And usually this stuff annoys the it just really bothers me. But a dear friend of mine, a writer who I respect a great deal, Sandy Huss, who actually teaches in the University of Alabama, once mentioned that she had just finished a book called The House of Leaves by Mark Z. Danielewski. Or Tudos Nomos in Portuguese. just had to say that again. House of Leaves by Mark Z. Danielewski. And this is a book that actually started appearing first on the internet and then was made into a book. And it's about a family who moves to a small house in Virginia and discover that the house is actually larger on the inside than it is on the outside. And one day they go away for a weekend, and they come back, and there's a door that wasn't there before in their bedroom. And they open it, and there's a four-foot little hallway that leads to another door that leads to their children's room.
I love it.
A little crawl space that no one knew was there, but they don't know how these two doors appeared there. Mm-hmm. And then for various reasons, the husband starts measuring, and he realizes that, in fact, after this happens, that the interior space of the house is 1/4 inch larger than the exterior space of the house, which seems, of course, impossible. And he calls his brother, who he hasn't seen in years, and he comes over and they measure. And in fact, it turns out the husband is wrong. Now it's 5/16. And then the bookshelves start getting larger. And so I'm terrified, and I'm on page 41. So I don't know what this guy is going to do to me by page 600 and something. But I just wanted to read one little thing here. Also, I might say that when I found out about this, I went looking for it in Pages for All Ages and found it was in the horror section Ghetto.
Shame on us.
Yeah, shame on you, because it is a scary book. But if you look at the quotes here, people are comparing him to Thomas Pynchon, David Foster Wallace. I would even put Richard Powers in this kind of company. This is an impressive book. Mm. And so this is a section because actually the way we've become, and there's multiple narrators and lots of footnotes. It's very crazy, but yet it all seems to work, at least so far. And it's about we first know about this whole thing because of a movie called The Navidson Record. Will Navidson actually is the man who, he's a Pulitzer Prize-winning photographer, and he's the person who moves in with his family. But before this movie comes out, 7.5 years before that, there's a little short that appears. The Navidson Record did not first appear as it does today. Nearly 7 years ago, it surfaced was, quote, the 5.5-minute hallway, unquote, a 5.5-minute optical illusion barely exceeding the abilities of any NYU film school graduate. The problem, of course, was the accompanying statement that claimed all of it was true. In one continuous shot, Navidson, whom we never actually see, momentarily focuses on a doorway on the north wall of his living room before climbing outside of the house, through a window to the east of that door, where he trips slightly in the flower bed, redirects the camera from the ground to the exterior white clapboard, then moves right, crawling back inside the house, through a second window, this time to the west of that door, where we hear him grunt slightly as he knocks his head on the sill, eliciting light laughter from those in the room, presumably Karen, his wife, his brother Tom, and his friend Billy Reston. Though like Navidson, they too never appear on camera. Before Navidson finally returns us to the starting point, thus completely circling the doorway and so proving beyond a shadow of a doubt that insulation or siding is the only possible thing this doorway could lead to, which is when all laughter stops as Navidson's hand appears in frame and pulls open the door, revealing a narrow black hallway at least 10 feet long, prompting Navidson to reinvestigate, once again leading us on another circumambulation of the strange passageway, climbing in and out of the windows, pointing the camera to where the hallway should extend, but finding nothing more than his own backyard. No 10-foot protuberance, just rose bushes, a muddy dart gun, and the translucent summer air. In essence, an exercise in disbelief, which, despite his best intentions, still takes Navidson back inside to that impossible hallway until, as the camera begins to move closer, threatening this time to actually enter it, Karen snaps, "Don't you dare go in there again, Navi," to which Tom adds, "Yeah, not such a hot idea," thus arresting Navidson at the threshold, though he still puts his hand inside, finally retracting and expecting it. As if by seeing alone there might be something more to feel, Reston wanting to know if in fact his friend does sense something different, and Navidson providing the matter-of-fact answer, which also serves as the conclusion, however abrupt, of this bizarre short. It's freezing in there.
Mm. Ooh.
And that's page 6, by the way.
And this book is titled House of Leaves.
House of Leaves, Mark Z. Danielewski.
Hmm.
Big, big book, but beautifully produced book too. And House of Leaves is interesting. I think my son came up with this and I was telling about it. He thought that leaves stood for like table leaves. In other words, you keep expanding a table more and more. And it could be lots of it. I think it's a very evocative title, but I think that is indeed one of the supposed
resonances. He's awfully smart for his age.
That's good.
And he's so smart. Let me just go on and just tell you what he's reading right now. He's reading. He's a sub-freshman in uni high school, and he's taking an experimental math course and where they are learning the principles of algebra by, are you ready for this?
Better him than me.
Decoding World War II military codes.
Wow.
And he so loves this course, which, you know, sort of makes math, the abstract principles of math come alive in real-world settings, which is one of the points of this course, that he's completely involved in code making, and he's excited about learning about the Enigma machine, which was the Nazi code machine that was almost a prototype of the computer, a mechanical computer that kept the codes going, and how that was broken. And because of that, we bought him a book called The Code Book by Simon Singh, S-I-N-G-H, The Science of Secrecy from Ancient Egypt to Quantum Cryptography. It was a national bestseller, and this is a book that my son simply cannot put down. It's a book for adults, but I think a book for teenagers, too, if they're interested in this sort of thing, and of course, adults would really love this book. It's very well
he was on Focus 580. We talked about that book.
Oh, really? Oh,
yes.
Okay.
I thought it was interesting. Some of it was beyond me.
Oh, okay.
But
already
I thought it was
I'm
very
confused.
Interesting. And what's what I think will delight a lot of people is that in the back of the book are codes which you are invited to attempt to break. And I know when the book came out, they actually had a contest. There was one that they said, if you could decode, if you could figure out the answer, they were offering a cash prize.
Wow.
But what it does is the codes in the back proceed from pretty easy to nearly impossible and incorporate the different principles, because what it is, it's a history of encryption, looking at some earliest efforts and how people, you know, initially started to try to put things in code. And when someone broke them, of course, someone came along and said, well, we've got to make something more difficult, and about how they tried to make it increasingly unbreakable. And I thought it was really very, very interesting.
Yeah. Well, he loves it. He loves the book. He's one of those books he can't put down.
Let us talk with another caller here, too. Urbana, next. Line number one. Hello.
Hi, Philip. I enjoyed your class many years ago.
Oh.
Very good.
Thank you.
Creative writing class. Actually, this is more of a statement for WILL. This is the best public radio station that I know about. However, I feel it's important to say I'm not pledging this pledge drive because of the lack of coverage of other presidential candidates, particularly Nader, even though he got a big, big time slot yesterday. It's not enough. That's all I wanted to say. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, sure. Okay. I guess I would say, at least in that point, that we have for years, been trying to get Ralph Nader on this program, including this one, and gotten nowhere.
Really?
Zero. Nothing.
I'm surprised at that.
So we did a number of years ago do a series of shows with alternate party candidates who would talk to us. And perhaps that's something that we should have done again this time around. We talked to the candidates of the Natural Law Party and the Libertarians and the Socialists and the Communist Party. We did those and got, I think, actually very little response from the listeners. There didn't seem to be all that much interest. Perhaps that's something we should think about for, I'm sorry to say now, we'd have to do it again next time around.
Yeah.
I hear what the caller says. But I do tell you, both Pat Buchanan and Ralph Nader, we have contacted their organizations to see if they would do Focus 580 with us, and we've gotten nowhere. So I guess they thought they had more important things to do.
Yeah. Quite surprising, considering they want the attention. You know?
Yeah. But, we're just a little public radio station here in the Midwest.
Where people don't vote.
Where people don't vote. Let's talk to somebody else here. Freeport, line number four. Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yes?
I'd like to mention, I'm up here in Northwest Illinois, of course, in the Freeport area. There's a very, very fine lady writer, very good interpretative writing she does for a little paper called The Prairie Advocate at Lanark, Illinois, Coralie Ashenbrenner. And you just have to read her writings, of course, to experience the excellence of her work. And recently she did an article on World War II in the 1940s, and it covered all the bases, you might say, about that era, because I'm in my early 60s, and I remember that era very well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd just like to compliment her for her great writing. She didn't need to go to any writing class in college, have any professor or teacher. It was all self-taught, you know.
Okay. And what's the publication her writing appears in?
Yeah. If you'd like to write and get a copy of the paper, I'm sure they'll be glad to send you one, The Prairie Advocate at Lanark, Illinois. Lanark is so small, all you'd have to do is put on the letter, the name of the paper. I'm sure it would reach them.
Okay. And how do you spell the name of the town? Is it
Lanark? Lanark.
A-R-K.
Just like Lanark in Scotland.
Okay. Very good.
Lanark. And then her title is very, very catching. Please don't quote me. She's very modest in her writings, but it's very unique title, too.
All right.
And it's right inside the front page.
Very good.
Prairie Advocate.
Okay. Well, thanks for the recommendation. We're here at the point here again. We need to take a pause for a moment or two to encourage people to call and support the station. We do this a couple times a year. Rest of the time, we're just doing the programming, but every once in a while, we need to remind people just how important their support is to the station. And just to respond again to the caller who called in and said he was not giving us money because of something we weren't doing, we certainly are interested in hearing from you, and it's important for you to let us know what you think we should be doing. Because we take that very seriously, and as much as we possibly can, we do shows that people ask for. It's not always possible. And as I said, in the case of Mr. Nader and Mr. Buchanan, we actually would have been happy to have them on the show if they would have done it. But they didn't. They turned us down.
Yeah.
And
I can tell you, this is Jack Bright,
yes,
and David's
our producer, one
right.
of our producers.
I try really hard, and I make lots of phone calls. I use email. I follow up intensively to try to get these people on the show. So it's not for lack of effort on our part, I'll tell you that right now. And if there's a defensive tone in my voice, it's because I really care about this stuff. I really want to get these candidates on. But they think we're too small time, and that the audience here, you know, they want to reach, you know, Dave Letterman, you know, and all that type of thing, Larry King. Little do they know how potent the listeners to this station are when it comes to the electoral process. So I'll just leave it at that.
Enough about us.
Okay. But I also want to say, you know, just on the same line, speaking of books, this is a place where you can call us up and you can send us mail and you can send us email if you want us to interview an author of a book you really like. We really like to get that from you. So if you have suggestions for us, we take those very seriously when it comes to deciding what we do on this program. Mm-hmm. That's another reason why it's your station, and it's also another reason to support it.
Okay. And you can do that right now by calling us. Not the number we use for this show, but it's a different number. We'll take you to Pledge Central so that we have volunteers, people who are supporters, have been good enough to come and give us a few hours out of their day to take the call. We'll ask you a few basic questions, a little basic info. We'll take not more than a minute or two, and your contribution, very important to us. 244-9455. Also in Pledge Central, Maeve Riley, who is the editor of Patterns, our program guide, has listings for the radio stations, for the TV station. She's there where the volunteers are waiting for the calls.
Yes, we're sitting here waiting patiently by the phone to get some calls. And you mentioned Crazy Dave and Jack's book giveaway, and Lois and Martha would be more than happy. It'll just take a minute of your time. If you make a pledge of $40 or above, they'll ask you if you want a fiction or a nonfiction book, and then Dave and Jack will pick out what they're going to send you, and you'll get that soon. But I'd like to thank a few people that have called already.
Sure,
Emily Holt from Aurora, Catherine Fries from Champaign, Mary Ellen Tuvison from Champaign, Keith and Nancy Bates from Danville, Janice Sober from Mansfield, Jeffrey Claretto from Terre Haute, Indiana, Dara Goldman from Urbana, Leslie Brothers from Champaign, and Keith Marshall from Urbana. And we thank you for your support. And if you haven't made a phone call yet, go to the phone now and call 217-244-9455.
We haven't talked a lot about the housekeeping stuff, and I don't want to do that too much, but maybe we should just remind folks that there are different options for making your contribution. We'd like to try to make it as easy as possible. If you'd like to put that on a credit card, you may do that.
Right.
If you work for the University of Illinois, you can do it on payroll deduction. That's another possibility. And actually, if we'd like to have you call, but you can even pledge online now. If you go to our webpage, you can do it that way.
Yep.
And I think probably we've been hearing more and more people through that avenue. And those would be the folks that would be perhaps far-flung, or maybe they just, you know, that's the way that they would like to do it. Whatever way you do it, whatever amount, those things you can decide. The one big decision we hope that you will make right now is that if you're not a supporter of the station, you'll become one. That's the big decision. And I guess as I think about it, if you listen a lot and you think the programs are good, it shouldn't really be a big decision. It should be a pretty easy one. You should say, well, yeah, of course, I want to support the station. And now's a good time to do it.
I would especially like to hear from people who are listening to us online, because I know there are a lot of people out there now who like to listen through their computers, whether they're in their office or they're, you know, too far away from Champaign or Urbana to pick up our signal clearly at night. People are using the computer. If you're listening on the computer right now, why don't you just check the page that has the link to Pledge Online and pledge online right now. That would be a really nice way for us to hear from folks listening online.
Yeah, that would be great. And again, if folks, you want to call and make a pledge at the $40 basic level, or if you're a student or a person on fixed income, use the $25 level. And if you can pledge more, of course, that'd be great, but that's all that's required. We'll send you a book. Something new, something we hope you'll enjoy. You can choose from fiction or nonfiction. And that's just, when we do these book shows, it's one way that we have of saying thanks. Thanks for your contribution. Here are our guests in the studio, Tanya Leotsakos from Pages for All Ages Bookstore, and Philip Graham. He's writer and teaches writing here at the U of I. And for a while now, we've been doing shows with them. Every once in a while, they come and they bring big armloads, sack loads full of books. They bring trucks. They back them up to the place, and they bring books in. And it's I enjoy it. I think a lot of people enjoy having some recommendations. So we're doing that. And also, if there's a book that you have read recently that you think is particularly good that you'd like to recommend to the other folks who are listening, you can do that too. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana folks. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And No one will expect you to pledge. You'll just come right here to the show, as usual. We hope people do pledge, but you don't have to do that if you're going to call in. Completely different deal. Okay, whose turn is it? I guess it's Tanya's turn.
Have a quick one. It's a short story collection by Ha Jin, who's the author of Waiting, won the National Book Award, and I believe Philip recommended it last time.
It's a great book.
It's a very, very good book, and the stories are very good as well. And they take place in contemporary China, in Muji City, same place as Waiting.
Yeah.
And they really give you a sense as to the political atmosphere and the sort of things that they consider criminal there, such as homosexuality or any kind of verbal political disagreement with the party.
A society that kind of wants to regulate interior space as well as exterior
space. Truly. Mm-hmm. And The Bridegroom, the title story, I think is probably the best one, but it's just full of very good short stories. And I love short story collections. A little here, a little there, you know, put it down, pick it up. Mm.
Mm. And this is a writer that in the past maybe just year or two has started to get lots of attention.
Mm-hmm.
Is this work that was written first in Chinese and then was translated?
He writes in English.
Yeah.
Which is extraordinary when you think about it. It's not translated.
Remarkably, too. I mean, the vocabulary is.
And he was someone who grew up in China.
He came here in the mid-'80s.
Yeah. He's from native China. Yeah, 1985. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To go to school. And he has, a couple of short story collections. Ocean of Words. Have you read any of
Yes, it's a very good
really
book.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you have two novels? Or just
Waiting.
One.
And also, what's
Under
the
Red Flag?
In the Pond.
In the Pond,
which is also very good.
Okay.
Haven't read that one.
Ha Jin. And certainly, again, his writings become very popular. Should be very easy to find all of his stuff.
That's one of the wonderful things about the awards too. Because when Ha Jin won Waiting, I think actually when he was nominated, I picked up the book to read it. I was interested in the book, and from that point on, I began to say, "Well, I like this person." And I read The Ocean of Words, and I read In the Pond. Now I'm getting ready to get The Bridegroom.
That's the way it works.
It helps you discover not only the book, a particular book that a writer has written and been awarded for, but you find out that any number of other books that author wrote could have also won an award or been nominated for an award. And so you get this wonderful relationship with someone you didn't know before.
Well, give us another one.
Well, another award winner we have in, because we're talking about short stories. This is The Knife Thrower and Other Stories, or Tudo Nomus in Portuguese. sorry, I just can't help myself. Stephen Milhauser, who is actually another Pulitzer Prize winning, another person who's won a major award, a Pulitzer Prize winner for his novel Martin Dressler, though my own favorite work of his in terms of novels is Edwin Mulhouse. But this is a story collection that has, it's a very good representation of Stephen Milhauser's particular obsessions. He has a story called Beneath the Cellars of Our Town that is about a series of underground passageways beneath a town that they're so proud of, and in fact they all start living down there. And Dream of the Consortium, or the new Automaton Theater, is about a city where the highest art form is people who make automatons. Like a person who can play, a Mozart sonata on a piano, a little toy piano, and they're all mechanical things inside and so forth. Or he has a wonderful series of stories that are about flying carpets, or about a park that's sort of contemporaneous with Coney Island and yet is fantastic beyond words, the most amazing things that go on at this particular amusement park. And his subject is the human imagination. And how it is protean, it goes everywhere, extends itself, and yet at the same time there's always a dark edge to a lot of the creations of his characters. And this is really quite a wonderful book, The Knife Thrower and Other Stories by Stephen Milhauser, a good introduction to his work. And if you like this, you might want to try Martin Dressler, and especially you might want to try Edwin Mulhouse, his first and I still think best novel.
I don't know if I only think this because I've started to read novels again after not having read fiction in a long time, and I think it pretty much is because of you guys.
Yeah.
Is it the case that there's more good literary fiction now than there has been in the past, or is it just I wasn't paying attention to it?
Well, I think that one of the cultural problems is that I think there's often been an enormous amount of wonderful work, not only in America but all around the world, you know, translated. Occasionally the best stuff gets translated, or some of the best stuff gets translated here.
Definitely true.
But the problem is that the main avenue of cultural expression in this country is the television. And there ain't no books on TV. I mean, there's very, very little of it. And so you can be the, you know, one of the greatest artists, you know, in America, and most people won't know anything about you because television doesn't give you an opportunity to find another audience. And it's just something where you have to find out how to seek out the books.
Yeah, don't just look at the New York Times bestseller
list.
No, not at all. In fact, it seems to me, I don't know if you agree,
but
it seems to me that I don't know what that says about our country, but it seems like the worst books make it to the bestseller list and stay there for weeks and months and even years in some cases. Just go to the literature section. Just walk through. Pick up, you know, there's no science to it.
Pick up a book and read a page.
Pick up a book and read a page. Yeah.
Okay.
And you'll have the thrill of discovering it for yourself. You know?
Well, I also want to make a strong pitch for folks who are listening. We have maybe in the range of about 10, 12 minutes left. And if there are, if you'd like to recommend something that you have read recently, that's great. That's part of the deal. And we like to have Philip and Tanya here to make recommendations. But you can do the same. And in fact, Philip and I were sort of talking here about it was my memory that that you had recommended The Sparrow that I got really excited about and went out and read. But Philip reminded me that, in fact, it was someone originally, the title came up because a caller called in.
That's right.
And
we'd both read it.
Yeah. And
no, I hadn't read it yet.
Well, I think Philip said he actually hadn't read it. I think you had read it, but he hadn't read it. And because the caller suggested, he read it. And because you guys talked about it, I
my reading group has been obsessed with it ever since. I mean, we read it something like 2 years ago, and it still comes up in our conversations.
That's a sign of a keeper.
So it is nice, very nice to have the recommendations from the listeners.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Okay. So
whoever the nameless person was, thank you very much.
333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, those are the numbers. Well, I know that you have some other things. So you want to mention a couple of the titles?
Well, let me take your turn.
The Story of a Million Years by David Huddle. It's his first novel. He's done some poetry and some short stories, I believe, essays. First novel. It's about a young woman who has an affair with a friend of her parents who's in his mid-40s or early 50s or something like that. And each chapter, and she's 16 or something, so it's iffy. But each chapter is from the perspective of a different person in her life, the first being her own perspective. And just wonderfully written and insightful. And shows you how many ways there are to look at a situation.
Yeah. He's a very wise writer. He's got a story collection called Only the Little Bone, which is one of my very favorite story collections. It's a wonderful book. He's a wonderful writer.
Okay. Well, you want to take it on your turn?
Yeah. This is a book that I wanted to recommend last time, but it was, as always, we always run out of time, you know, so we sort of save, well, I didn't get it last time, so I'll bring it to the next show. This is a novel by the writer Margot Livesey called The Missing World. And it's a novel about a woman who is hit by a car and she suffers memory loss, but a kind of peculiar memory loss. And in fact, it's common. This does happen to people where the last 3 years of her life she can't remember. She can remember everything up to that point. The problem in terms of the story is that during those 3 years, she left her fiancé for all sorts of things that were not acceptable. And when he finds out that she has this amnesia, he wheedles his way back into her life and actually manages through a series of interesting plot developments to get her to live with him where she can recover. And he's working as hard as he can to marry her before she remembers what happened in the past 3 years.
Oh my.
It's a very scary, quietly scary book, The Missing World by Margot Livesey, Livesey.
Okay, very good. Let me, Tanya is writing down the title of the book. She wanted to make sure that she had it. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. By the way, if there's anybody who wants to call in here before we end up out of time. Your turn again, Tanya.
Gosh, what to do, what to do. picture books. And I see that Philip also brought one illustrated fairy tale collection, is it?
Yeah. Well, tales.
Tales. Right. By Leo and Diane Dillon. They're very famous. They've illustrated many books together, married team. Two I have to recommend. One is The Girl Who Spun Gold, which is an African-American retelling of Rumpelstiltskin. And it's just, this is the problem with radio. There's really no way.
You can't show the pictures.
There's really no way to show you the beauty. I mean, honestly, these people are.
Look at that.
I had to do that. I'm sorry. Can you do that in Portuguese?
Really are. Look at how frightful.
Ooh.
Yeah. Anyway, they're wonderful. Switch on the Night by Ray Bradbury, illustrated by Leo and Diane Dillon, had been out of print for quite some time. One of my favorites. It's back in print. Find it
Good
in your
Ray.
Children's section.
That's the Ray Bradbury.
Switch on the Night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is all a coincidence because I brought in a book illustrated by Leo and Diane Dillon. I had no idea that we were doing this. And this is The Girl Who Dreamed Only Geese and Other Tales of the Far North as told by Howard Norman, who in fact is the author of The Bird Artist that I recommended just a while ago. He's a very distinguished fiction writer, but he also has lived in the northern regions of Canada, and he speaks, Cree fluently, and he has done a lot of translations and retelling of Native American tales. So this is actually one that's designed for children, again, with beautiful illustrations, which I'm sorry nobody out there can see, as well as, I should just maybe mention since we're on that subject, only The Wishing Bone Cycle. The Wishing Bone Cycle, which is a wonderful collection of Cree tales translated as poetry. That's just one of my favorite books of all time. I'm not even sure if it's in print, but you should check that out as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, we keep going.
Oh, boy. Okay, I'm going to read a little bit from Fibble Stacks, another picture book by someone I'm not familiar with until I found this, by Devin Cillian, S-C-I-L-L-I-A-N. And it's about a boy who decides what to call things. He names everything in the world. And his name is Fibblestacks. I dreamed again of Fibblestacks sitting among his books, peering into the candlelight with a calm, thoughtful look. For he's the one who gives a name to every single thing. If not for him, we couldn't talk or read or write or sing. He called the dog a dog, and he named the cat a cat. He called the little mouse a mouse, and he called the big mouse a rat. He decided a whisper sounded like a whisper and a smile looked like a smile. He called my parents mother and father, and he called me a child. But see, before Fibblestacks, there was this awful man, and his name was Carr, and he used to decide what things were called, and that's where we get all of the ugly, careless, haughty words in the world. But Fibblestacks comes along and changes them all, and there's one point in the story when they have a contest, a naming contest, and the mayor describes the feeling of love and tries to get them to, you know, put a name to it, and Carr can't think of one because he's never felt it. But Fibblestacks calls it love, and it's just beautiful. It's a beautiful story, and the illustrations are fabulous. They remind me of David Christiana, who's another children's illustrator that anything by him is recommended.
Another one here, a novel. Well, I'll talk about that a little bit. A book by Amadou Hampate Ba, B-A is his last name, The Fortunes of Wangrin, which is one of the most famous novels or books written by anybody in West Africa that has only recently, in the past year, been translated into English.
Which Philip recommended to me, and I read and support heartily.
A wonderful book. Yeah. And it's a book about a man named Wangrin who, when he's quite young, he's sent to what is called a hostage school. And that is that the children of some of the more powerful chiefs and leaders in the West Africa, their children were sent to these schools where they would learn how to be French. They would learn the colonial ways, but they were hostages. In other words, you behave yourself because we've got your kids. And Wangrin, when he grows up, becomes a civil servant in this colonial setting, and he becomes utterly and totally corrupt. And this novel is about the the history of his total corruption. And the amazing thing about it is, I mean, without really talking about it, says that, well, here you have a situation where you've got someone who's been trained in the French language and the French colonial ways, and he's the middle person, okay? You've got the French administrator who doesn't speak a West African language. You've got him in the middle, so he can lie to both sides. And he does effectively. And it really, in a sense, talks about how the colonial system sort of developed a kleptocracy in West Africa that continues to this day in some countries because of the way in which it was just too easy to get whatever you wanted, you know. And so it's about a man who has been corrupted. And at the same time, you love Wongren because he's given it to the to the colonizers at the same time that he's enriching himself. It's very, very funny. It's very exciting. It's almost like a mystery in the ways in which he gets to do the things that he wants to do and all the machinations. And at the same time, what's very interesting is that it's called by a lot of people a novel. And Humbert de Bois is really upset about this. He was upset about it. I'd say it's not a novel. This was told to me by somebody who was indeed Wongren, you know, by a different name. And his fortunes had utterly collapsed, and he wanted me to know what his life was like. And I think one of the reasons why people want to call it a novel is because there's a lot of spiritual stuff in here, a lot of things that happen that we say, oh, that couldn't happen. That's a novel, you know, in terms of spirits and other things. And, and you know, Bois says, no, that really happened. I mean, he's in his culture, and he says these things occur. So it's a it's a spiritual world you enter as well as a political world, beautifully written, beautifully translated.
Very much reads as a novel.
A classic West African novel that took too long to be translated into English. But now that it's here, go out and get it. Amadou Hampati Ba, The Fortunes of Wongren.
Well, now that could just be a dodge, an author's dodge, just to say, oh, no, I didn't make this up. It really happened. Someone told this to me.
If you've been to West Africa, as I have, and you've seen things that aren't easily explained by a Western rationalist you know, point of view, you wouldn't so easily say that it's not a documentary, too. But again, no, who knows? Who knows?
We're almost out of time. Is there one more?
I think we should talk about the Achebe book.
Okay. Well, since we're on Africa, Chinua Achebe. This is not a new book. In fact, there are 2 million copies in print.
Yep.
Things Fall Apart, the great novel by the great Nigerian novelist. And
maybe one of my top 10.
Yes. And I brought this along because, as I think I mentioned in a previous show, that my son and I read books together. We get 2 copies of a book and we read, you know, in tandem. And this is one of the books that we read. He's 13 now. And Nathaniel has lived in a West African village when he was 6, so he remembers it. But I think anybody would love this book, and any child would love this book if being read with an adult, because it really is about a man who's torn apart inside, Okonkwo, who wants to be a very strong man, and yet he does terrible things sometimes because of that. And he wants to be strong out of a certain essential weakness. But it's also about Africa being colonized and not, again, just political, but 2 different worldviews. You have the missionaries coming in saying, this is the way the thing works.
These missionaries.
And then you have the local animus priests who say, no, it works this way. And in fact, the way Achebe writes it, no one side can fully explain what goes on in this. And it's very, very interesting. And it really makes you think about what religion is and what belief is and how religion is used politically, aside from being a wonderful portrait of a very flawed human being who comes right to you on these pages. And it's a wonderful book for teenagers to read.
And anything by him.
Yeah.
He's a beautiful speaker as well.
Yeah. But Nathaniel and I had a fabulous time reading this together.
Good. Would it be fair to say that he might be Africa's best known writer?
I would say so.
And probably this is probably the most famous book by the most famous writer in Africa.
And why he doesn't have a Nobel Prize, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
Well, you know, guys, we're going to have to quit. It's always a great pleasure when you are here. We appreciate very much you giving us your time, you bringing all these books. And it's good for me. I like it. And I just hope that other folks appreciate it as much, having all these recommendations. So we'll all go and we'll do a lot of reading. And then maybe another couple of months, we'll come back and we'll do it all some more.